Well, as you're well aware, there's all kinds of political fighting and bickering and confusion and conflict and debate in our nation's capital in Washington, D.C. That's nothing new. I think that has always been the case. People who are in Washington, D.C. are going to bicker and fight and complain and argue. I think that just goes with the territory. It's not surprising. I'm sure you're well aware of the fact that even currently in Washington, there's some special hearings being held regarding especially the conduct of our former president. I'm not going to express a side. I have a side about that. But I'm not going to express a side about that. But you know that there are some hearings going on. Probably it's been much in the news, these hearings that are taking place. There was an interesting development this week. And I don't know if you caught this in the news. A witness was called to testify before this special committee in Washington. And this person, a woman, gave testimony concerning something that she thinks happened. She wasn't there. Someone told her that something might have happened, and she was called to give testimony concerning that. That's out of bounds. That's not regular. That's not normal. That's not even fair justice. For in a court of law, that would be called hearsay evidence, and it's not even admissible. If you were under trial for something and someone said, well, someone told me that that's what he did, a judge would throw that out in a court of law just immediately as hearsay, not admissible. And so there was a big blow up in the news about whether or not this woman's testimony should have been given. Why not ask the people who were actually supposedly there, who were firsthand involved in the situation, ask them? Turns out those who had firsthand knowledge of the events said it didn't happen. What this woman said happened didn't happen. The people who were in the know said, that's not correct. It seems like, I'm just saying from a common sense point of view, it just seems like you'd be better off talking to the people who know what they're talking about than maybe someone else who doesn't. All right? Now, I'm just making that point because I want to make an application to our study this morning. Our point is, eyewitnesses are better than people who were not there. Experts are better than those who don't have a clue. That's in regards to anything. But I want to suggest to you that's also true when it comes to spiritual matters. And this morning I want to suggest to you that we need to talk to some people who know what they're talking about when it comes to spiritual matters. Now, you may be surprised that the experts that I want to refer us to this morning, the ones that I want to investigate, get their testimony, they are not the heroes of the faith. We're not going to be talking about Noah or Abraham or Moses, although we could get great testimony from them because they had firsthand knowledge and worked with God. We're not going to talk about those great heroes of faith. We're not going to talk about the prophets. We're not going to talk about Elijah or Isaiah or Jeremiah. They'd be great. They could give great testimony because, again, they had firsthand knowledge. They had experience with God. We're not going to talk about the apostles. We're not going to ask them to testify to us this morning. We often do. The inspired apostles and prophets of the first century. We're not going to talk about what Peter or Paul said, although they have great information to provide for us. We're not going to talk about some of those Christians who lived in the first century. We're not going to get testimony from someone like, for instance, Stephen, who was, as we often refer to, the first Christian martyr. We're not going to talk to any of those kind. We want some information. We want some testimony, but we're not going to talk to people like that. You might be surprised that the ones that we're going to refer to this morning are the demons. We want to find out what the demons know. But I could suggest to you, they know what they are talking about. They're not right. The demons are not right. But they are still in a position to know some things for a certainty, and they're things that we need to know. So we're going to talk for just a few minutes this morning about what the demons know. We stop here to thank you for being with us on this Lord's Day. It's great to see you all. We have a beautiful Lord's Day in Middle Tennessee, although hot. We're hoping for a little rain this afternoon, maybe we could use it. But we have a blessing to be able to be together this morning to worship God. We've got a number of visitors with us this morning, and we're glad that you have come our way. We want to invite you to come back every time you have a chance. And, of course, we are open to questions. If we can help you, especially with Bible study, We'd love to do that. We thank you for being here this morning. So what do the demons know? Well, let's start out with a very basic thing. The demons are not atheists. The demons believe in God. There's an increasing number of people in our world who deny that there is a God. I was looking at some survey reports, and it indicates, although still in a fair minority, the number of people in our country who claim to not believe in God has doubled in the last 10 years. And so atheism is much on the increase right here where we live. In fact, these atheists who deny God also typically would look down upon us who claim that we do believe in God. But what about that? Well, the demons should know whether there's a God or not, and they do. And they don't doubt the existence of God. In the text that Kyle read for us a few minutes ago from James chapter 2, beginning verse 17, "Even so faith that hath not works is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Thou believest that there is one God. Thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead?" So James's point here, James's overall point is, just believing something doesn't save you. And specifically, he said, we could even talk about the demons who believe. It certainly doesn't save them just because they believe. That's the broader context there in James chapter 2, as you're well aware. But just pluck out that phrase, the demons believe. So if you were to be able to have an interview with a demon and say, is there a God in heaven? The demon would say, well, of course there is. Are you crazy? Why would you even ask such a question? The demons believe that there is a God. In Psalm 53, verse 1, the fool has said, there is no God. The demons would tell me, you mean... You know, so if you had this interview with a demon, and you were talking about the existence of God, and you asked the demon, is there a God? I don't think there's a God. He would say, of course there is a God. And by the way, I can't believe that you would even foolishly suggest otherwise. A demon would tell you that you're being foolish to deny the existence of God. You know, sometimes whenever we do something that's kind of awkward or silly, you know, maybe you tumble down the steps as I have done before. You know, you trip and fall down the steps. What's the first thing you do? Typically, you jump up to look around and see if anybody saw you do that, right? Because, you know, it makes you look rather foolish and you wonder, who saw me do that? Well, you say there is no God? Look around. Even the demons are saying that you're foolish if you don't believe that there is a God. And so, again, here's some experts. Here's some expert testimony, if you will. This is not hearsay. They're not just telling what someone else told them. They're telling what they know. They know that there is a God. The demons are not atheists. They are also not religious modernists. And when I say that, I think you understand this terminology, modernist. The modernist, and of course this is sort of a movement of the 19th and 20th centuries, the modernist movement. And concerning the Bible, a modernist would say that the Bible is just a collection of what the human authors thought and what they felt and what they believed at the time that they were writing. The Bible is not a collection of factual information. It's just a compilation of essays of some people who wrote down what they felt, maybe what they personally believed, but it's not a supernatural revelation from God. The modernists would say, for instance, that, and we mentioned this in our Bible class, the modernists would say there are no real miracles. Everything that is described as a miracle in the Bible can be explained away in some natural sense. Something natural happened and the superstitious, uneducated people of those ancient times accredited it to be a miracle, but it wasn't really a miracle. There were no miracles. That's what the modernist says. And the modernists would also say that this Jesus, he was just a man. There wasn't anything particular special about him. He was a good man. He was a very effective teacher. He urged a higher level of morality among the people of the day when he lived. But Jesus was just a man. He was a good man, but he was just a man. That's what the modernist says. I'll tell you, the demons are not there. The demons are not like the religious modernists. They know that Jesus was not just a man. Again, look at what the demons know. They in Mark chapter 1, beginning verse 23, there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, saying, "Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee who thou art, the Holy One of God." So notice this unclean spirit, this demon that was possessing this man, acknowledged Jesus. He knew him as Jesus of Nazareth. But notice he called him the Holy One of God. Now, again, we would make the point that that acknowledgement doesn't save the demon, but it certainly expresses what he knows to be the case, what he knows to be true. Jesus is not just a man. Jesus is the Holy One of God. We see the same thing in Mark chapter 3, beginning verse 10. For he had healed many, insomuch that they pressed upon him for to touch him, as many as had plagues, and unclean spirits, when they saw him, fell down before him and cried, saying, "Thou art the Son of God." These unclean spirits, these demons, when they saw Jesus, fell down before him and cried, "Thou art the Son of God." And so the demons know what apparently the religious modernist is not able to figure out, and that is that Jesus was more than just a man. He was the Son of God. I suggest to you that the demons also acknowledge the authority of Jesus. I want you to remember what Jesus himself said about his authority in Matthew chapter 28, verse 18. Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, "All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world." This is, of course, what we refer to as the Great Commission. But I want you to notice, and we don't often emphasize this, but it's very important. Notice the intro to the section that we refer to as the Great Commission. We usually start here with the Great Commission, but notice what Jesus said as a lead-in to the Great Commission. All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Jesus says that he possesses all power. And of course, that is an expression of his authority. He possesses authority. He has all power. Now, I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of people in the religious world today, even religious people, who do not acknowledge that Jesus possesses that power. For instance, in the religious world, our denominational friends, they actually hold special meetings. They hold conventions, synods, legislative assemblies, wherein they vote new rules for their religious bodies. For instance, some of the mainline religious organizations in recent years, in their regular meetings, have discussed, debated, and even voted upon whether or not homosexuals should be granted the privilege to serve in their ministry. Clergy members, as they would call them. Open, active homosexuals. And a lot of them have done so. They've amended their rules to allow that that's possible. It can be done. They think they have the power. They think they have the authority to make such rules, to change the rules. Jesus said, "No, all power is given to me." Jesus possesses that power. Men don't have the power to set those kinds of rules. But you know, I'm sad to say that I think even among our own brethren, we see an increasing tendency to act without authority. We put a lot of emphasis on Bible authority. We think we should do Bible things in Bible ways. We think we should have authority for all that we do say and practice. We think that we should be able to give book, chapter, and verse for what we're doing. But that's not so, not even necessarily so among our own brethren these days. What about this business of the authority of Jesus? Well, I think the demons acknowledge that authority. Look in Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, verse 27 beginning. he was met by a certain man from the city who was possessed with demons. And seeing Jesus, he cried out and fell before him and said in a loud voice, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," for many demons had entered into him, and they were entreating him not to command them to depart into the abyss. We can make the same point we were making a minute ago. Notice, they acknowledged Jesus, the Son of the Most High God. The demons knew who they were dealing with. They knew that Jesus wasn't just man. He was the Son of the Most High God. But the point I'm suggesting to you from this passage is, they were entreating him not to command them to depart into the abyss. They understood that Jesus had that authority. Jesus had that kind of power. He could command them, and they would be expected to react to the command that Jesus gave. The demons knew that. I wish that more men knew that, that Jesus does possess all power to command. And that does not come to us. We're not privileged to change the rules or to legislate different things. All power is possessed by Jesus, and the demons know that. And they acknowledge that he has the right to command, and we must act. I think the demons also understand the concept of accountability. When we talk about accountability, the thing that sort of comes to mind is, in regards to things that I'm accountable for, I'm typically pretty fast to make excuses for why I haven't done what I'm expected to do, right? That's our human tendency. I'm always surprised that even little children learn that capability pretty quickly. Even little kids, if you scold them or try to correct them, they're quick to point a finger at somebody else. "Well, he started it," or "she said that first," you know, and make excuses for why they do what they do. We're pretty good at excuse making, because what we're doing when we offer excuses is we're trying to dodge accountability, right? The reason why we make excuses is we're trying to say, "Well, I'm not responsible. I'm not accountable." But the demons don't make excuses. Demons apparently make no effort to excuse themselves. I would guess that that's probably because they know that that would be a completely futile endeavor. There's no reason to try to make excuses. When you're accountable, and you will be held responsible. Look at Matthew chapter 8, verse 29. Matthew 8:29. "Behold, they cried out, saying," again, this is the demons, "Behold, they cried out, saying, 'What have we to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God? Art thou come hither to torment us before the time?" Art thou come hither to torment us before the time? The demons understood there's a time coming. There's a time coming when they'll be held accountable. There's a time coming when that accountability will result in their judgment and punishment. They knew that. There's a lot of people today who apparently do not accept that reality of accountability. But the fact of the matter is, the Bible plainly teaches us that we are accountable before God and we will be judged. And if we have the good sense to accept the testimony of the demons, let alone all the other testimony that's found in the Word of God, we would accept this concept of accountability. So let me remind you what we said at the outset. Who's telling us this? Is it someone who doesn't even know what they're talking about? Or is it someone who's in a position to know what they're talking about? These demons are in a position to know what they're talking about. And they actually provide some information to us here that's very valuable. Now, it's not that they're going to be saved because of their understanding of these truths. They're not. They're going to be ultimately punished. But at least they know these things to be so, and they're in a position to know that. And we should be willing to accept the reality of the testimony that they are providing. I want to suggest to you that the demons do not deny the reality of hell. I was looking at some survey results from the Barna Group. I think that name probably means something to a number of you. This Barna Group does a lot of polling, and specifically they do a lot of polling on religious and moral matters. And recently they presented another poll, they've often done this, about how many Americans believe in heaven and hell. What would you guess? How many Americans believe in heaven and hell? Well, I think you would guess a lot more people believe in heaven than believe in hell, and that is in fact true. 76% of Americans believe in heaven. So 3 out of every 4 Americans believe that there is a heaven. But only 32% believe that hell is a, quote, actual place of torment and suffering. So less than a third believe in an eternal burning hell. That's not too surprising. That's always been the case. But here's in that same survey, and this is a little bit unusual, a little worse than I've seen in the past. You know how many Americans believe that they will actually go to hell? So only 36% believe that there is a hell. How many Americans do you think, what percentage of Americans do you think believe that they personally will go to hell? 0.5% believe that they personally will end up in hell. Wonder why on a beautiful Sunday morning like we have this morning in Middle Tennessee, wonder why when we come to church on Sunday morning, there's way less traffic on the roads than there are most other days of the week. You know, if you get out on the roads at between 8 and 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, almost no traffic. At that same time during the week, traffic around here is getting horrible. Have you noticed? Traffic right here in Columbia, Tennessee, our traffic is getting worse and worse. How come there's not so much traffic on Sunday morning? Well, because these people are not going to church, because they don't think they have to. They're going to heaven anyway, right? Almost all of them, 99% plus of the people who are not going to church on Sunday morning still think that they're going to go to heaven. They don't believe in hell. But the demons believe in hell. Let me read you something here. I thought this was particularly interesting. A lot of the people of the world deny that there is a literal hell. But sadly, a lot of religious people do also. And this is interesting. This quote comes from a former president of Pepperdine University in California. So this is someone who is affiliated with Churches of Christ. Notice what this former president of Pepperdine University said. He said, "For years I have lived with a developing pressure because of my intellectual conflict with the fundamentalistic doctrines and dogmas and doctrines of the Church of Christ. For years it has been increasingly difficult for me to accept the simplistic assumptions of the hellfire and brimstone which most preachers in this church teach." And so there's a person, a leading intellectual, academic among Churches of Christ. He says, "My big problem is I can't accept this business about hell." Well, what about that? Is there a hell or is there not? Well, you know, it's interesting that the demons don't deny the reality of hell. Look at Matthew chapter 8, verse 29 again. We were looking at this just a minute ago, but look at it again. "They cried out, saying, 'What have we to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God? Art thou come to torment us before the time?'" Now, we were mentioning before that they understood there's a time of judgment coming. But they also understood that the result of that coming time of judgment would result in torment. They anticipated real torment in hell. They didn't have any doubts about the reality of hell. Go back one more time to that text that was read at the start of the services in James chapter 2. Remember, James said, "Even so, faith that hath not works is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, 'Thou hast faith, I have works.' Show me thy faith without thy works. I will show thee my faith by my works. Thou believest there is one God. Thou doest well." Here's the point that we were emphasizing. "The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead?" Want to know why would the demons or devils tremble? Well, there's only one answer, right? Because the devils, they believe there's a God. As we've said, they believe that judgment is impending. They understand the horrible punishment of hell. They accept the reality of hell. You know, if you stop to consider hell, and we don't do that often enough. I think we do it a lot more than many people in the religious world, but maybe not even enough. When you think about the horrors of hell, how terrible hell will be. There's a lot to be considered about that, but just emphasize this one thing about hell. The reality of hell is that it'll never be over. The reality of hell is that it will be eternal. And we can deal with bad circumstances as long as we know that it's not forever, right? So let's say that you've got something bad going on in your life right now, but you can see, as we often refer to, the light at the end of the tunnel. This is a bad stretch I'm in right here. Things are not going well. I'm dealing with some real troubles. But I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. That sort of sustains us, keeps us going when we're in hard times, right? That'll never be the case in hell. Hell will be forever. There will never be a light at the end of the tunnel. There will never be a release or an escape or relief from the torments of hell. The devils know that. And the devils tremble at the knowledge of that. We would be wise to pay attention to what they know. All right, so here's the testimony of some experts, some people in a position to know. Again, this is not the great heroes of the faith, although they could tell us important truths for sure, many of them along these same lines. These are not the prophets or the apostles. These are not even other faithful Christians of Bible times. All of those people could give us information, much corroborating information to what we've talked about this morning. But here we're just talking about the demons. These are beings that are in a position to know, and we should be willing to accept the testimony of these experts. Now, they're not saved, and they're awaiting that terrible torment. They tremble at the thought of it. They're not saved, but they do know some things that we need to know, and we'd be well to pay attention to their testimony. Thanks for listening this morning. Hope it makes us all think about the very realities of eternity. There is an impending judgment. We will be held accountable. There's an eternal punishment for those who do not obey God. What's your situation this morning? Are you right with God? Have you obeyed that simple gospel plan of salvation? Hear, believe, repent, confess, be baptized for the remission of sins. If not, we hope you make that decision. If you need more help, more study, if you have questions that need to be answered, just say so. We'd be glad to work with you on that. If you're a Christian, but you have not been faithful to the Lord, realize that what these demons testify to is a warning to you. Even if you're a Christian, but if you've not remained faithful to the Lord, come back to Him in repentance, confession, and prayer. If we can help, let us know while we stand and sing this song.